For ID the Future, I'm Sarah Chaffee. The publication of Bruce Buff's new novel, The Soul of the Matter, is a first. The first ever appearance of Discovery Institute staff in a Dan Brown-style thriller of international and scientific intrigue. It's not quite the first use of intelligent design as the backdrop to a novel. That honor would go to New York Times bestseller Dean Koontz and his novel, Breathless. But as David Klinghoffer writes in a review at Evolution News and Views, Mr. Buff's treatment of ID is extensive and well-informed, put to effective use in a tense story that, quote, makes your foot jiggle nervously and your palms sweat, even as it deftly deals with a range of issues connected with ID, and makes some points I hadn't thought of before. Mr. Buff is with us today on ID the Future. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
First of all, congratulations on the publication of your book and the fine reviews it's received so far. I'd like to read a couple of excerpts from those, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The Soul of the Matter is a thriller of the month at Barnes & Noble, which says, quote, although we're frequently distracted from them, most of us struggle with the basic questions of existence, the how and the why. Buff pivots from these fundamental questions in his urgent new book, in which a renowned genetic scientist with a dying daughter contacts an old friend, former government cyber intelligence analyst Dan Lawson, with the remarkable news that he has discovered something incredible in human DNA, including evidence, he says, of a creator. And here's what Publishers Weekly says, quote, readers who enjoy ruminating on matters of faith and science while also engaging in a thrilling plot filled with deception and international intrigue will flock to Buff's novel, unquote. Wow, those are enviable reviews. This is your first novel. You're a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia University. You're not a scientist, but you write about science. Tell us how you came to start thinking about evolution and intelligent design.
Well, I'm not a scientist. I actually did take a fair number of undergraduate science courses early on when I was pre-med, and it's something that I've read up and thought about over the years, so no one would pass me off as someone with a degree in physics or biology or anything else, but you know, I felt comfortable around the topics. And the way it came about really is in 1986 or so, there was a magazine cover that said that we had a very large percent of DNA that was identical across all people. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if there was something hidden in there for a plot for a book? You know, I didn't take that idea seriously. It was just something I was going to have fun with. And then later on, as I became more familiar with evolution itself and the implications of it, I started thinking it through. And so when it came time to write the book, I wanted to find a way, a plausible way, in which something could be hidden or encoded in DNA. And the act of researching that made me aware of some of the things that I discuss in the book that were new to me, and perhaps not to others, or maybe to others, that I've explored in detail. So that's really kind of the genesis of my origin of intelligent design. It wasn't something I felt I needed to pursue for a faith reason. I felt very comfortable in my beliefs, and still do. It's just I had a desire to know what I believe to be true. And that's where it led me.
How much of the science in The Soul of the Matter is taken from ID works you read, and how much is fictionalized? You know, where does fact end and fiction take over?
That's a good question, and something my publisher was interested in as well. So we actually have a page and a half at the end of the book that states in a bit of detail what I believe to be true, what I believe to be likely, though not yet proven, and what I have flat out made up. And I would say of the ideas in the book and the discussion around evolution, I pulled a small percent from the intelligent design works that I've read that have been, you know, really good stuff, mainly because I only wanted to touch on that and felt people could learn about that directly themselves if they wanted to. I explored ideas that I thought were perhaps additive in some way to that. Plus, I wanted to explore the implications a lot more on our day-to-day view of the world and what that all meant. So I would say more than half of the science in the book is demonstrably real, because I also talk about physics and consciousness as well. And maybe half, a quarter of that, of left, is what I hope is or think is probable, and the remaining quarter is just flat out made up for fun purposes.
So in your book, two of the protagonists pay a visit to Seattle's Pioneer Square and our offices here at Discovery, and they meet with a fictional scientist, Dr. Peterson. Your description of the premises is pretty accurate, you know, a small set of offices more befitting a small neighborhood business operating on a tight budget than an organization that had attracted the attention and scorn of most of the scientific establishment, unquote. It sounds like you visited here yourself. Tell us about your research in Seattle.
Yeah, I had to go to Seattle for work, and so it made sense given that I was featuring a few chapters in Seattle itself, beyond the Discovery Institute, and one in particular at the Discovery Institute, to learn as much as possible about it. And while there are things you can learn at the internet, there are things that you really can't get a feel for unless you're in person. So I was fortunate in that some of you folks were kind enough to host me inside your offices, but the outside stuff was readily visible on, you know, like street views from the internet and things of that nature.
So David Klinghoffer, in his review, compares your book, The Soul of the Matter, to Dan Brown's novel, Inferno, and says, imagine Dan Brown meets Stephen Meyer, meets Wesley J. Smith, and you'll have an idea of what's in store for readers. How did you get interested in writing thrillers? Anything to do with Dan Brown?
Well, I wasn't really thinking about Dan Brown at all, other than I wanted to be what I thought was a little bit more intellectually honest, at least from my perspective. And I thought of a thriller because from the very beginning, the idea was, what if there was something encoded in DNA? And that was fanciful and something I have fun with in the book, but that meant a thriller. The other part is I had ideas I wanted to communicate. And as you noted earlier, I'm not a degreed scientist. And even if I was, the possibility of getting some real peer reviews and then the possibility of getting attention beyond that would have been extraordinarily challenging. So I thought that if I did a decent enough job with the thriller, which fortunately enough people seem to resonate with right now, that I stood a much better chance of getting ideas out into the general population that, whatever their merits, certainly I think deserve discussing, rather than the restrictive view of what's allowed to be discussed today.
Yeah. By the end of the story, you've wrapped up most of the action, but there are a couple of tantalizing questions that you've left unanswered. I'm understanding that this is the first book in a series, a trilogy of novels. Where are you now in writing those, and what can readers look forward to?
Both books are well scoped out and planned out. I've got a fairly large portion of the second book done. It's due to be published next August 15th. And whereas this book, The Soul of the Matter, the first one focuses mostly on biology and evolution, the second one is going to get a lot more into consciousness and what does it mean in terms of our life? What does it mean to be human if consciousness is solely a physical process? And what does it mean if it's something more than that? And of course, the most important part of all this is that I do that in a way that's entertaining for the readers to read about. The first and foremost objective here is to thrill and entertain and make it an enjoyable that a person's reading this. This is not a college lecture or anything else. It's just something that I hope enhances a story and communicates ideas that are worth communicating. So the key thing for me is to make this a continuing story, but done in a way that, like all books, are self-contained and feel like it delivers a payoff in and of itself. So that's the challenge I face, and I'm feeling good about where I am right now, but it'll ultimately be up for the readers to decide.
As you know, intelligent design is a scientific theory that resists the neat Darwinian storyline of gradual, stepwise, and unguided evolution. Some people are actually frustrated by the idea that we don't offer a comparable narrative and instead leave some points as question marks. You know, the source of the design, the mean by which that design enters nature. The answers to those questions lie outside of current science. Do you think that as a storyteller you have an advantage in being able to go places that intelligent design itself, which is bound to the science, can't go?
Oh, absolutely. Most definitely. I mean, in the third book in particular, I'm going to take the point of view or explore in detail that if we are here by intent, if we somehow are more than physical matter, you know, based on just the empirical observations of what takes place in the world today around us, what framework or what theory a philosophy can fit all those pieces together. And so I take a cut at that because, you know, certainly what we see in our day-to-day life is suffering that's unimaginably horrifying for whether it's just an individual person or whether it's for large groups of a society, whether it's the outcome of deliberate action or whether it's seemingly just a gust of a wind at the wrong point in time. And so I'm trying to put together a framework of how to think about how all of this fits together. But a potentially unasked or unexplored point of your question is, if ID isn't offering a full alternative theory, is it worth pursuing? Is it scientific? And I think, first off, if Darwinian evolution is considered a scientific theory, anything that could potentially falsify it by definition has to be scientific as well, because you cannot dispute a scientific theory on a non-scientific basis. And if it gives us more insight into science in general and points us in the right direction, even if it doesn't give us the answer at that point in time, you know, certainly that is worth scientific investigation and consideration. I mean, right now, no one has any idea how you tie together quantum physics and general relativity. Well, but no one's calling that unscientific.
Mm-hmm. So in his own new nonfiction book, The Kingdom of Speech, novelist Tom Wolfe is critical of Darwinian evolution and writes about language and the absolute distinction it marks between people and animals. Only human beings have language, and we're also the only creatures that tell stories. When you think about it, it's an amazing thing that a writer can draw a story from nothing out of his or her imagination. Tell us about your own creative process. How do you create fiction?
I start with an idea that I wanted to communicate, and I start building out from there, and then I think about how do I want people to feel as a part of it, and that turns into characters, and then I think about how I want them to feel over time, and that turns into a plot line, and then I think I want to make it, you know, as realistic as possible, so that I have to get more involved in understanding the science and the nature of the elements that go together with my story. And then from there, you know, I try and do a broad outline, because one thing I really want is the story to work front to back and back to front. And a lot of stories I've read have been fantastic. The first third, you know, they start, you know, not being as strong in the middle third, and by the last third, you're saying, you know, I really wish, you know, this had turned out differently. You know, it's because a lot of great authors come out with the great idea that they aren't able to bring home. So while this is my first effort, and I doubt I'll be ever considered in the great author category, I do want this to be enjoyable front to back for my readers, so I focus very heavily on that. And in terms of Tom Wolfe and the Kingdom of Speech and the difference that we have versus animals, I think that's a direct reflection of having a different kind of consciousness or different kind of soul than they do, that the difference in biology and the difference in genetics isn't so gradual and isn't so similar in kind that we're in functionally no different than the animals, but in fact that because we have a different type of consciousness, that we do and are exceptional as human beings, as Wesley Smith often observes and states.
As a novelist who's pro-ID, you're in good company. I mentioned Dean Koontz and his novel Breathless. Stephen King, another huge bestseller, has spoken out in favor of intelligent design, though we don't know if he's done much research on it as you have or what exactly he means by the term. Tom Wolfe, as we mentioned, has been publicly sympathetic to ID scientists, noting what he calls the Spanish Inquisition that's being waged against them. You're now a participant in this larger discussion of ID in our culture. You mentioned a few minutes ago a desire to kind of get this idea, this discussion out into the public realm. Besides entertaining your readers, do you have any more thoughts on the goals you have in this evolution debate?
I just really want people to understand what it means and the implications and them to get the full story. Wherever it leads, you know, I'm most interested in truth. And if it somehow turns out that evidence arises that I need to adjust my thinking, so be it. But, you know, we take the term evolution for granted, but it means so many different things to so many different people. And in the academic world and in the scientific world, it's considered largely synonymous with a materialistic worldview, and that God didn't play a role, or anyone else, or any other thing didn't play a role in how we got here. And you know, that's not how a lot of people think about it. You know, evolution itself means change over time. So my ultimate goal is to communicate as clearly and make it as real to people as possible the implications of what they're being told and what they believe and where it can all lead and what the evidence does and doesn't say.
Well, you're certainly off to a very promising start, and we look forward to your next novel. Listeners who are curious to read sample chapters from your book can find 3 at Evolution News and Views. Just go to evolutionnews.org and search for the terms Bruce Buff or The Soul of the Matter. Thank you for your time, Mr. Buff.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed this.
You're very welcome, and congratulations again. The Soul of the Matter is available now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'm Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.